Hey, pharmacy owners out there, thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Running a pharmacy business is not easy. The obstacles for succeeding today are tough. When I came across a product that gives pharmacy owners an edge, I get excited. That's why I want to tell you about the Pen Needle UltiGuard Safe Pack. When pharmacies dispense these pen needles, they see consistently higher revenue and higher margins. With the Pen Needle UltiGuard Safe Pack, you're doing more for your patients and more for your pharmacy's bottom line. Check it out for yourself. Go to UltiGuardSafePack.com/podcast. That's UltiGuardSafePack.com/podcast. And let us know what you think. And as always, thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.
You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Pharmacy Podcast Nation, this is the host and founder of the Pharmacy Podcast Network, Todd Urey. I'm glad you're here today. Thank you for listening. I'm tired of the coronavirus. I'm not sure if anybody else is, but it's impacting all of our lives in a negative way, and there's some positivity that comes out of it. I've definitely grown closer to my 8-year-old daughter, Lola, and her schoolwork online, as well as what she needs help with, has definitely been a positive outcome. But everything else in the world on hold for this COVID-19 situation is daunting and stressful. I'd like to welcome back pharmacist and empowerer of pharmacy and the change of pharmacy and what we all need to do together to transform pharmacy, Ken Sternfeld, the original concierge pharmacist. Welcome back, Ken.
Hey, Todd. Good morning. How are you on Easter Monday? We're back to work. Hope everybody had a wonderful holiday remotely with family, with friends, with loved ones. This is a time when really, even though we're physically isolated, we are and need to be closer connected to our loved ones and our family. So maybe we learned something from this, the value of family, the value, you mentioned your daughter, who I know and have had the opportunity to podcast with. You know, you never know when you're running around doing the normal stuff, that when you don't have the time to really spend time more with your family. So embrace it, certainly as much as you can.
So I am just completely put out and tired of what we're all going through and the exhaustion that I see in the faces of our healthcare professionals, the nurses, the physicians, the pharmacists, the stories that I pick up through Twitter, and people that have responded to many of our coronavirusrx.us episodes, which this episode is a part of. If you don't know of that, it is coronavirusrx.us. It's kind of a place where we're putting all of our podcast content about this this pandemic. But how are you handling it? Has it been changing much of your life or your friends' families' lives and the lives of the pharmacists that you're supporting?
Yes, it has. And anyone who thinks that this is not a life-changing time is just living under a rock, because it is a change. But through the change, you do need to look at the similarities and the vision about why we became healthcare providers, why we are pharmacists, and what we're doing. It's like we're almost having to go back to school and think about why we became pharmacists, to help people. And I love the fact that all of the pharmacists, no matter what role they play, are all really motivated and mobilizing to help patients. That's why I went to school. That's why we went to school. The fact that the point of care has changed because we don't get to see them as often as we always did as a most accessible healthcare provider doesn't stop our desire to stay connected. Todd, what we've seen, and we have a group of CVS pharmacists who are putting their efforts in to work in those stores. We have a number of independent pharmacist owners who are a part of the RX VIP group. We have a number of individuals who are doing this who has stepped back in, like Jason Cavallina, who was not working in a chain store, but because there was a shortage by Rite Aid here on Long Island, he stepped in to go back to work in a chain store environment. I thought it was just an extraordinary example of someone understanding that this is a time for pharmacists to step up. Are we reading the Twitter? Are we following the negativeness? Of course, because it's horrific. Anyone who doesn't complain has to complain because we've never lived through this. But through that complaining mentality, I believe comes hope that we will come through this, and we are flattening the curve. We have to stay the course. So pharmacy, our world has changed, but the role of a pharmacist, thought honestly, from my perspective, has not changed. It's just gotten more important.
I think it's become more focal because now we're seeing, and when I say we, I mean the public, not you and I, because you and I have believed in this for, you know, for me since 2004, and for you, it's been 30 plus years, not to give away your age there, Ken, but we know what a pharmacist is capable of doing, especially in the age of how we're transforming from behind the counter to stepping out and being a consultant, a concierge pharmacist. There's an article that came out of New York 10. It's a News 10 affiliate to ABC News. And they did a press release and story specifically on New York pharmacists who are pushing to be able to provide more point of care testing and how important this is now more than ever in the age of COVID-19. I want you to expand upon this, Ken, because A, you're from New York, B, you're a pharmacist, and C, you've believed in this for years.
I have. Well, point of care, those three words, were the backbone of what RXV was developed to do. And it wasn't just to do testing. We're going to talk about the positive that came out this week where point of care testing for COVID-19 was approved, that pharmacies, again, being accessible, will be points where more consumers will be able to get tested. Because, Todd, we know testing for the antibody, testing for ability for people to go back into the workplace after they've contracted it, whether they have contracted it or not. So testing is important. And the fact that there were regulatory restrictions lifted this week, this past week, for pharmacies to do point of care testing, I think is an extreme positive. It's just sad that it took a pandemic for legislative reform to move us in that direction, but we can expand on it. I had several conversations with labs who have the test, and I didn't just say, hey, what do you have in terms of COVID-19? But it's about an opportunity to get involved with other point of care testing, you know, strep, you know, UTI, et cetera. If we are the point of care to do that testing, let's not just put ourselves in a box. I mean, when we started doing flu shots, it was just the flu. And then it expanded to pneumonia and Zostavax and others. You can take this where you want. So point of care testing and the changes last week, Pod, extremely important, extremely valuable, because not just that it advances the pharmacy profession and our role in healthcare, but it's going to save lives. It's going to save lives. That's what we do. So point of care testing is an extremely positive move that occurred last week.
Yeah, it's exciting because we know that, as you said, they're already testing for influenza and other infections. Adding this to the testing list ongoing after we get through this is going to help public health improve because of being able to catch things at a specific level in their increase within that patient's body, and things that could be done to lessen and shorten sickness periods based on what pharmacists understand and know. And I think this will raise flags to CMS and our federal government level with regards to topics like provider status.
And, absolutely.
And how pharmacists, and by the way, when I say that, I mean stay in your lane pharmacist provider status. I'm not talking about doing things that physicians do. And we talked with Dr. Mulani about this. Dr. Mulani believes in care collaboration, and the power of a pharmacist and a physician together is tenfold more effective than just a physician or a pharmacist by themselves. And that's like a aha or a duh moment, whichever side of the coin that you're on. But the reason the pharmacists are not recognized by federal government as healthcare providers is because it really, I don't think anyone in that division of you know, United States government and healthcare and even CMS tracking, they've really not really understood that so many of those black and white reimbursement codes have not been thought through. I think when we went from one sector of healthcare to the next, the electronic health record evolution, I think the pharmacist, instead of just dispensing and what they were able to do within 23,000 plus independently separated pharmacies out there, as well as the national chains, as well as some of the things that are happening, they've missed the effectiveness of giving pharmacists the ability, seeing their patients 10 times more than a physician, to act as providers and be paid as providers. So I think that this is going to help that effort to come to reality.
I agree, but can I talk about reality for a second? Because it's we've been talking about what they haven't done for us. We've always advocated for provider status and identified the reasons, the true value that we bring to the healthcare system, and questioned why they didn't do what they should have done years ago. But from my perspective, and this started when I started RxVIP, kind of in the memory, definitely in the memory of my father-in-law, Bernie Ton, who I lost at that time, and I needed to fill that gap. He had a saying to me, and we were great, great business friends, great family friends, great sports friends. And he said to me, he taught me so much. He says, things don't generally succeed in business, not because of the CEO or the CFO or the CTO or the CIO or whatever, CMO. He says, sometimes they don't succeed because of EGO, because of ego. And I believe that pharmacists have the right then certainly to talk about their credentials and their value, but sometimes going that ego would take them to the point that I am a doctor of pharmacy. I can do dispensing protocols. I can monitor the glucose. I can monitor the gaps in therapy. And that created a pushback, which we heard with Dr. Mulani, and not the only one. Nurse practitioners had the same issue when they got certified, and they got certified at a 15% haircut or discount to what a doctor is. I believe a pharmacist is as valuable as a provider because a doctor, because of the medication impact that it has on their life. So what we did was we said, yes, I know in my heart I could do all those things for the doctor, but I chose not to. I chose to be the best damn pharmacist I could be and go to the height of my diploma, not my license, because the license was dispensing. I didn't want to dispense Lantus. I didn't want to take that liability. I didn't want to go past what I felt the doctor would be comfortable with. So the collaborative business agreements that we set up and continue to set up for pharmacists across the country allowed them to be compensated as providers. We took a different path, Todd. We took the path of partnership and collaboration, which I believe is the backbone of healthcare. We will get provider status. We have to. The healthcare system needs it. They just can't afford it. That's the reason why we didn't get it before. Because Medicare did a calculations on what it would cost to pay pharmacists for the true value-based services they deliver, and they couldn't afford it. Now, who knows? Now they can't afford not to do it because of our value to save lives. So we will get provider status, but we need to work for it, not just talk about it.
So we're slightly over 500,000 confirmed cases within our country. here in the States, above almost 2 million worldwide. We're just slightly over 22,000 deaths. And then the hope that we have, which I always like this side better, total recovered of 33,000 people in the United States and 500,000 worldwide, which is great. I still don't see the, and I want to kind of talk to you about this specifically, but I don't see the intensity in comparing COVID-19 with H1N1 bird flu and how many people perished based on that version of influenza versus COVID-19. So I kind of wanted to talk to you about that.
Well, I think they're jumping over that, going right to Spanish flu, because for two reasons. Number one, there's a consistency to the horrific amount of deaths that came from Spanish flu in 1919. As a matter of fact, I found out yesterday through conversation with my sister. As you know, we do a bagels with conversation with her every Sunday from Israel. And that little country is doing great things to address the COVID-19 pandemic. But we did matzah with my sister yesterday because of Passover. And what she told me was that I didn't know my father had a brother, Ben, who passed away. And he passed away, they thought, because of pneumonia. Maybe that was what was done. But he got the Spanish flu and he died in 1919 at 6 years old. So I think we're going past H1N1 back to that, because it also brings us back to the time of the Depression or on or about. Because then when you marry the economic impact, I don't think anyone in our lifetime, our parents always felt that we would never have another depression or to deal with it. But we are. I mean, look at the unemployment, the double digit. And I think so. That's why, Todd, I think there's clinical data certainly to assess relative to what's going on now with H1N1. But I just feel that people, maybe it's the politicians or maybe it's the administrators or just the voice, they're really looking at this that it's really even worse than that. And I think it is.
Well, I think that there is too. And, you know, when I read a lot of different news sources, I refuse to pay attention to one source. And I don't think anyone that is, a researcher would ever rely on one source. And I just think that it's time to wrap this thing up. I mean, from an economic perspective, we have to at some point get back to business as usual in order to pull the nosedive of how the economy's recovery is going to take a while. I mean, it's we're in something. And by the way, there are people that said we were on the way to a recession anyway, based on data and predictive modeling. And then you add this on top of it. There has to come a time, Ken, that we as Americans, we as in the industrial organization and high tech organizations that we have in our country, come to a point where we say it's time to get back to business. It's time to wear our masks and pay attention to, you know, washing your hands more likely, or put a policy in place that demands it. And now let's get back to work, because you can only do this quarantine thing so long before you get to the next level of killing off jobs and industry and people's lives and livelihood. And I can't help but to think of so many of the more intelligent conspiracy theories that have come up that aren't the wacky ones, because those ones are silly. Like 5G spreading coronavirus, that's absolutely, you know, hilarious. It's just completely silly. But when you start thinking of the true economical reasoning for extending a quarantine beyond May 1st without getting back to business, it's a mind scratcher for me, and I'm not settled. Like, I don't feel like, up to this point, I felt comfortable with the decisions that have been made at the federal level, our guidance, our government, our state level government. Even here in my own county, the government has been very good at leadership. Beyond May 1st, Ken, in my opinion, it's time to get back to work.
Well, you and I talk almost every Saturday. Today it's a Monday. And over our course of time, we agree on a lot of things. And sometimes we don't agree. We see it from a different perspective. I think it's not about agreeing or disagreeing. There is no right or wrong. Nobody knows. That's the issue. I believe if you were or anybody who would be making a decision would drive on 164th Street in Elmhurst, right by the house, or in the neighborhood where Donald Trump used to live, where I did, and you would see 13 trucks lined up outside of Elmhurst Hospital because of dead bodies that they can't put into a morgue, you would say that perhaps it's not time yet. We don't know what we don't know. All I can do, and I think all what pharmacists should do, is do what we can for our slice of life. And what I mean by that is we're committed to hire pharmacists and to put money in their pocket so they can get back into the workforce safely. We're here to take all of the APPE students who spent $150,000 to $200,000 on their education and can't graduate and to give them the pathway to graduate. We're here to help them learn and earn. So we want the people who can make the difference saving lives to get back into the economy safely. I don't know if it's black or white. I certainly think it's not black or white, right? Because this is we have 50 countries within our borders. Okay, each one has a different pathway. If you say May 1st, June 1st, July 1st, August 1st, I don't think there'll ever be a normal, Todd, again. I think by the time, I really don't, sadly, but optimistically. And if I say that, don't think that I'm crazy and I'm bipolar. I am optimistic that if we go back to the grassroots, and I am telling every student of pharmacy who we mentor, every pharmacist that we work with, to do what they do naturally, which is call patients and see how they're doing and to connect. I don't care whether CVS used to tell me every Saturday that I had to be at 38% or 42% or 19%. That's a number. These are patient lives we're talking about. The number is, and I tell them, the number is you as one person have to connect with that other person on the phone. You have to let them know that you care. And I am absolutely positive that through remote patient monitoring, through telemedicine, through being the caring pharmacist that all of us who listen to the Pharmacy Podcast Network and your nation do. I appreciate the weekly podcast that you do on COVID. But honestly, Todd, I love all the things that we talk about. I can't talk about going back to an economy that basically is putting that decision even at the same conversation as lives. 793 people. We're flattening the curve, but flattening the curve at 750 to 800 loss of lives a day here in New York State. I don't predict this on any other state. We are the epicenter because of we're kind of a cultural melting pot, and everybody came here from JFK, from other countries, because it's a great city. So we're feeling that now. But every city, whether I talk to a pharmacist in Arkansas, yes, how's it going? It's not so bad. It's okay. I'm Louisiana. Just look at what's happening. Don't watch the news. The news is depressing. Okay? What we have to do is you have to watch the mirror and say, what can I do today? How can I get back to work to help patients? And we got to do it together. There cannot be divisive and disruptive comments. And it's not politically motivated. It's not a statement of fact, but we need to do what we need to do to save lives as pharmacists. RxVIP is committed to stand up to COVID. We've been in contact with universities to take residents. We're going to have a resident program taught. We're going to have an e-learning curriculum to train people. There's a college, Wegmans College at St. John's Fisher University. It's the first university to do, and they were planning it before COVID, to do a online PharmD program. We need to collect those people and bring them into one unit. And Pharmacy Podcast Nation, Todd, is one singular voice for this profession. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk always, But give me an open mic. I mean, set me up, show me how to turn this thing on, and let's get people to call in and help them. We're a helpline for pharmacists. It's not just information.
Right.
I'm sorry. I also
want your 800 number in the show notes for everyone that's listening to this, that if they want to understand and engage with the concierge pharmacist movement at this stage and in this time in our nation, I think that's very important, Ken.
844-MY-RX-VIP. 844-MY-RX-VIP. Because everybody needs somebody who can give them some information with no agenda. And none of our educational pathways cost anything. I applaud all the people who teach counseling and charge for information. That's important. That's good for them. It's good for their business. It's not good for my business or our business. You know, we want to have a career day, Todd, every day. I don't want to have an event that has to wait. We're hiring every single day. 1-844-MY-RX-VIP, 697-9847. If anybody can't figure out the letters, call me. I want to help. I need to help. This helps me. This helps me, having students and pharmacists where I can get on the phone and tell them that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. It's not a COVID freight train. I tell you, that inspires me. I spoke to a dozen of pharmacists and students of pharmacists over the weekend. They found time around their holidays. They weren't bothering me. I needed them to call. I want them to call.
In addition to the Department of Health and Human Services announcing that pharmacists could order and administer COVID-19 testing, we also have the evolution of pharmacist and telehealth services and able to counsel patients via telehealth, and that's exploded over this time area in time. That was growing, Ken, up until this, but when this pandemic broke out, it really made so much more sense to people and patient opportunities and client engagements and pharmacists and physician collaboration, nurse collaboration. So I'm excited to see that telehealth is taking a explosive growth because of this, which makes absolute sense. And the providers of some of that telehealth technology are also experiencing tremendous growth, which is awesome because now when we come out of this and we reach our new norm, as you and I have talked about before, I don't think telehealth will ever go away because it will be part of just medicine today and treating patients for a myriad of conditions that could be intelligently and evidence-based diagnosed and treated based on a physician and a pharmacist team through telehealth. So I'm excited.
I agree. And I'm going to send you a conversation that I recorded, albeit I tried to do it myself, and you know that never works real good. But a conversation with the president, co-founder of Diasys, which has remote patient monitoring and for diabetic patients. Todd, there are only 6,500 endocrinologists in our country. I didn't know that until I had the conversation. Doesn't seem like a lot when there are 30 million diabetic patients who are suffering that horrific disease, which you can live with. You're not going to die from diabetes. You're going to suffer and perhaps die because of the complications. So we are initiating, we'll have a press release this week, of a unified effort to take telehealth and remote patient monitoring and chronic care management and direct observed therapy, all Medicare codes that are payable to the pharmacist and to the physician to help keep diabetic patients alive. Todd, I'm very excited about this because as you may or may not know, I lost my brother at 41 years old to diabetes. And I can tell you if this program from Diasys was available to when he was suffering, he'd be alive today. So I am all in on doing something that is telehealth related. And by you're right, it's telehealth is not going away. Telehealth will become part of the new normal, not the new normal. You're always going to want to see that doctor in person. But today it's a needed component to stay connected to patients. I had a urologist and a cardiologist who did video telehealth consultations with me last week, okay, because I needed to see my doctors in April. And that kept me on a path, though at least I know what the heck I should be thinking about or doing. Todd, we're going to give any pharmacy owner an independent. I mean, we're not going to talk about the CVS's and the Walgreens of the world. They have their own initiatives, albeit very good collaborative, you know, things that they're doing. But any independent pharmacy, if he can stay in touch with his or her patients in the communities that they've invested their life in and stay safe, why wouldn't they want it? We're going to give it to them and to let them kick the tires on a telehealth platform. You know Howie Jacobson. He's been on the phone and a podcast with us a number of times, a great advocate for PBM reform and a great independent pharmacy owner of 3 stores here on Long Island. Howie needs to stay connected with his patients. So we gave him a telehealth platform and we showed him in 10 minutes how to sign up his patients. And then he called me to say, hey, I want this pharmacist, I forget what the name is, I want him to be our telehealth guy because nobody sees us anymore. And if you don't see the pharmacist, you don't get the value of the pharmacist. So telehealth is so critical in patient engagement. And we have that solution and we don't charge you for it. We don't make a nickel on it. And I hope all of the telehealth technologies survive. But let me tell you, Todd, the one we've chosen, Spruce Health, is the only one that comes with a pharmacist in the box. And you've met me. I'm about 300 pounds soaking wet. So think about how hard it was to fold me up and put me in the box with telehealth. But every pharmacist who uses this platform puts themselves as a care provider, as a medication expert, as a billable service provider who will make money by using telehealth. So can I call that number again? And I'm not selling anything. I sold 20 years ago in consumer electronics, 30 years ago. I'm not selling a thing. But if no one wants to just take advantage of the new normal, I don't sadly think they're going to make it out of this process because there's no bailout for independent pharmacies. There's not out of the $1 trillion, I don't know how much money is going to Howie Jacobson. Probably not a lot. So we want to help that independent. The corner of every corner can't be a big box retail. It's just not right for the community. It's not good for the community, not good for our profession.
So the National Alliance of State Pharmacy Associations has offered 4 action items that could be taken to help revive and reestablish some normalcy when we get to that point based on the pharmacist's leadership that definitely touches on everything that we've talked about. The 4 points that they've included, which I'll put in our show notes, is to allow pharmacists to test, treat, and immunize for infectious diseases, which would include obviously COVID-19. Number 2 was allow pharmacists and pharmacy technicians with valid license to cross state lines leveraging telehealth technology. And that should definitely be something that will continue, Ken. And number 3 is allow pharmacists that are providing direct patient care to manage therapeutic substitutions of drugs in coordination with the physician when there are shortages and have the FDA identify potentially drugs that are going to be shorted based on the data that you can source back from many of the connections that are coming from the pharmacy management systems and work with the manufacturers to address that issue. And then number 4 is allow direct reimbursement for services delivered within scope of practice. And if services are delivered by other healthcare providers, for us to automatically bill incident 2 billing opportunities, which is how a pharmacist and a physician work together in order to get that pharmacist paid. It's funny how they've stated these 4 things, Ken, but this is exactly what the concierge pharmacist has been doing now for how many years now?
5.5. Todd, it's the core 4, what you mentioned right there. I'm a Yankee fan, so it's, you know, my core 4. I know you're Pittsburgh down there with We Are Family and all that stuff. But the point is, doing all these things are critical to patient outcomes. They're critical to saving lives. So I applaud those four mandates. One other thing that occurred last week, Todd, which I thought was extremely powerful, is that the Medicaid population is a very, very important population, especially since we've seen now the numbers coming out for the horrific high percentage of Afro-American and underinsured people and people who can't afford proper health care. They're dying at an incredibly, unbelievably, it's a horrible rate. And these are the people who are out there at the grocery stores delivering the food that we eat, or the people who are at that loading dock at Amazon to get a package to us, or UPS to get a package or deliver the mail for the post office. So what Medicaid did, and I thought it was great, even though it's state mandated by state, I may only be speaking for New York State, but in New York State, they are allowing pharmacies to do business the way they have to. And what that means is, in the past, you couldn't transfer a Medicaid prescription from one pharmacy to another. Now you can. In the past, you could not fill early for a Medicaid customer because it was mandated by the dosage for how many days. Now they've given you waivers to allow you to get medication to patients and over-the-counter medications. As you know, Todd, Medicaid covers a tremendous amount of over-the-counter medications, which keep people balanced in their life. And also, they will allow them not to go through regulated signature verifications. They can take it on the phone. If they deliver medication to someone and they don't open the door, you don't have to get that signature that you did. And the other thing is that, you know, things about asking those patients for the copays. You needed by law to ask for that copay, or they needed to say to you, I can't afford it, in which case you could waive it. So kudos to New York State Medicaid, and also kudos to the legislation in New York who put the PBM on their ass last week as well with an initiative called FixRx, where they removed the PBM from the Medicaid New York State program to allow independent pharmacies to stay in business and make money that had been taken from them by the behemoths and the devil of PBM. I don't know whether you knew about that, but I can certainly get you information. It was an initiative from Pisney, New York, with the state of New York, and Howie Jacobson was very involved, and it was called FixRx. And they had a website, and they lobbied, and they advocated, and they kicked the living crap out of the PBMs here in the state of New York. And I am thrilled because more patients and more independent pharmacies will be able to serve those patients and stay in business.
So I heard about FixRx a while back and how the changes to New York State Medicaid was being impacted. But no, I did not hear about that victory. That is absolutely incredible. I'm glad that you've mentioned that. We definitely have to put that in our show notes.
And you got to get Howie Jacobson on the phone, because even as a COVID survivor, Howie Jacobson, as sits on the board at Pisney statewide. He's the past president of the Long Island chapter. He's actually someone I went to school with, and we created a whole bunch of problems then, but we're doing a lot of things now together to advance the practice of independent pharmacies so they can serve the patients in their communities and do it for a way that they can pay their bills and keep their staff. So I absolutely am thrilled that the PBMs got their ass kicked right here in New York.
That is terrific, terrific news. And I will put that in the show notes for everyone that that wants to access more information. Ken, I really appreciate talking with you. It makes me feel better. I think just talking to many different healthcare professionals that we're in touch with, and my favorite's pharmacists, but I appreciate this time with you.
It's always a pleasure, Todd, and I can ask for one favor. Let's do this more often. Sadly, once a week of a Todd fix for me isn't enough. I miss you. You know how I feel about you personally and professionally. And I think when we talk from our hearts, always have, and I think it resonates. So even if it's you just showing me how to turn this on while you're saving the world of Pharmacy Podcast Nation, let me do that. Let me be your intern. Let me be the person who works with you and for you to deliver more meaningful, resonating, uplifting conversations at a time when I think we need it more than ever before.
Well, Ken, you are always on point, and I enjoy these conversations as well. So we look forward to the next.
Thank you so much, Todd, and stay safe, and God bless you and all the things that you do.
Thank you. You are listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Nation. Please reach out to all of our pharmacy podcasters at pharmacypodcast.com/shows. Go to our contact section and leave us a voicemail. Give us your opinion. You do not have to agree with us. Ken and I love getting into intelligent debates about a myriad of different things within our healthcare industry. So let's create conversations together, because that's how we move forward together. Is you do not have to agree with everybody at all times, but we do have to move together and talk this through and even argue and be respectful. And this is a place that we would love to promote those kinds of conversations. And as always, we thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.